This podcast was recorded Thursday, October 3rd at 10:33 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, like we, especially we in the media, won't be terribly disappointed when two candidates have a largely civil, substantive debate. Imagine that. Anyway, let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians who wear soft colors to try to soften their image. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up on the podcast, those soft colors lead to our Snollygoster of the Week award winner. But first, in the end, it was just a regular old vice presidential debate. Many predicted a brawl, with J.D. Vance and Tim Walz going after each other, attacking their past controversial statements, their military records, their credentials to be second in command. In the end, it was, let's face it, just a very plain Midwestern debate. There were some sharp critiques, but there was a whole lot of passive aggressiveness and a fair amount of substance. The vice presidential candidates spent most of their time going after their opponents' running mates, not each other. Vance asked why Vice President Kamala Harris has not done more to stop illegal immigration and inflation, rising inflation. Walz called Trump dangerous on foreign policy and criticized him for dehumanizing Haitian immigrants in Springfield. Among the highlights were their answers to a national abortion ban, abortion restrictions on the national scale. Walz argued for a national standard similar to the standard in the Roe versus Wade decision, which was overturned by justices appointed by Donald Trump.
This issue is what's on everyone's mind. Donald Trump put this all into motion. He brags about how great it was that he put the judges in and overturned Roe versus Wade, 52 years of personal autonomy. And then he tells us, oh, we send it to the states. It's a beautiful thing. And the catch-all on this is, well, the states will decide what's right for Texas might not be right for Washington. That's not how this works. This is basic human right.
Vance again struggled to balance the GOP's hard anti-abortion tradition with the reality that the tradition is not the choice of a majority of Americans.
My party, we've got to do so much better of a job at earning the American people's trust back on this issue where they frankly just don't trust us. And I think that's one of the things that Donald Trump and I are endeavoring to do.
A key moment in the debate came toward the very end when the candidates were asked if they would certify an election if their side lost, as Mike Pence did on January 6th of 2021 after rioting Trump supporters tried to stop him.
This was a threat to our democracy in a way that we had not seen. And it manifested itself because of Donald Trump's inability to say. He is still saying he didn't lose the election. I would just ask that. Did he lose the 2020 election?
Tim, I'm focused on the future. Did Kamala Harris censor Americans from speaking their mind in the wake of the 2020 COVID situation?
That is a damning non-answer.
It's a damning non-answer.
There is a lot to unpack in this debate, and joining me this week is WOSU's Anna Staver. She hosts the talk show and political podcast All Sides with Anna Staver on WOSU and 89.7 NPR News. Anna, welcome to Snollygoster.
Thanks for having me.
J.D. Vance channeling Mark McGuire there. I don't know if you remember Mark McGuire when he was brought before Congress to talk about the steroids in baseball. He says, I'm not here to talk about the past. And J.D. Vance didn't want to talk about the past. Anyway, what was your takeaway from the debate?
You know, that is definitely one of the takeaways from the debate. But overall, I think Vance had a pretty good night. I think he did well to pivot to the middle. I think Walz, to a certain extent, allowed him to soften his image. Even when the topic of Springfield, Ohio came up, Vance talked about the people there, not the rumors about the cats and dogs.
Yeah, they didn't get into the he did sort of get into the weeds a bit on whether the Haitian immigrants were here legally or not legally.
Yeah.
They are here legally.
Produced a fact check ish.
Yes, he was kind of nuanced. Anyway, he got very lost in the weed, and I don't think it helped him. But I agree with you. I think J.D. Vance, let's just focus on him because he's the Ohio guy, of course. J.D. Vance did what he needed to do. He needed to first stay on message, which Donald Trump failed to do in his debate. He was very clearly blaming the Biden-Harris administration for the rising inflation, for the surge in immigrants, illegal immigration in this country, and also foreign policy. They blame that on the Biden administration as well, the war in Ukraine, the war in the Middle East. Every answer had something along those lines in it, which Donald Trump did not do in the first debate.
Yeah, I think he did a good job. Do I think it makes a difference? That's a totally different question.
Yes. How about his? Now, Vance has been sparring with reporters and really being an attack dog since he was named the VP, you know, using harsh language, spreading false rumors about Haitian immigrants. But in this debate, he was Mr. Congeniality. The pink tie. I'm sorry. The first thing I noticed was the pink tie. I think I texted you. I said, this is the first time in presidential debate and vice presidential debate history that one of the candidates dared to wear a pink tie. And that was no accident. That was to soften his image subtly.
It could be. Yeah. I think it also harkened a little bit to Usha Vance's dress.
But she didn't come on the stage until very late.
No, but they seemed a little coordinated in hue. But yeah, at the same time, I mean, he's also a millennial. Mm-hmm. Millennial men seem to be more comfortable. Like, I've always seen the joking, you know, real men wear pink.
Yes. Well, I think it helps, you know, it helps. If you look at all the campaign ads, we'll talk about this in a moment, but all the campaign ads in the Senate race in Ohio feature middle-aged suburban women. That's what it looks like. And I think that is a key electorate that the Republicans and J.D. Vance and Donald Trump and Bernie Marino in the Senate race need to win over, because they've been struggling with that. But both he and Walz were very, very –
It was collegial.
It was a normal debate. We have forgotten what these debates are supposed to be like.
They agreed with each other.
They conceded that the other person was right once in a while. That has not happened since Donald Trump arrived on the scene.
When Walz talked about his son being witness to a shooting, Vance had what I thought was a genuine reaction of, oh, my goodness. Like, you could tell he felt for Walz. And I was like, I don't know why that stuck out to me, because that's what you would expect of human beings.
It stuck out to you because we haven't seen it in quite a while. And that was amazing to me, because, like, this is the way it's supposed to be. They were sharp critiques at each other.
Yeah.
They were biting criticisms. But it was civil. And, yeah, they both stretched the truth here and there and glossed over inconvenient facts. And
it felt like a 2008 debate.
Yes. You know,
a 2012 debate
where the biggest, you know, biggest gaffe was binders full of women. Remember that one? That was the big takeaway?
Yeah, I think the biggest gaffe of this one was, I'm friends with school shooters.
Yes.
Now, we all know Tim Walz meant that victims of school shooters is what he was trying to say.
Yeah. Yeah. But he was unprepared. Maybe he was overprepared, some say, but I think he was out of practice. That's how I look at Tim. J.D. Vance, for 8 years, has been doing media interviews and battling with reporters on cable news.
He's also a lawyer.
He's an attorney. And he has not shied away from tough interviews. And that practice showed in this debate. The Harris and Walz campaign, they have not done the tough interviews. And there's risk to doing tough interviews, but there's benefit in that you're prepared when these debates come around.
Yeah, I think that Walz was definitely nervous in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Now, I do think he started to warm up. He started to find his voice, started to feel more comfortable. But, I mean, this is probably the largest debate stage he's ever been on. I would be nervous with tens of millions of people watching me.
The first question, I think, threw him.
I think that was a bad first question. I'm just going to say it.
Like, yes, it was.
Most of the country still doesn't know much about these men. Why? Oh, why didn't they start with, like, a short introduction?
It was because of the journalists who picked the questions were focused on what was going on in Israel, where the war.
And don't get me
Hezbollah,
wrong, that's a big story.
Yes,
but
the war at Hezbollah had just taken off that day, so they said, well, that's the big story of the day. Let's ask that first. It's like, and I think Walz was thrown off by that. Foreign policy is not his game right now.
And also, to be perfectly honest with you, when it comes to foreign policy, yes, he would be advising Harris as Vance would advise Trump, but that is a question I think is much better suited to the president.
Mm-hmm. And you could ask that third or fourth there. I think in the list of questions that voters have, as bad as things are in the Middle East, that's probably fourth or fifth on their list right now. So bottom line is, I think the flash polls after it say it was a draw. I think Walz overcame his slow start. The viral moment, which we heard, where Vance refused to say that Trump lost the election. I can't say that I was surprised, but
I wasn't surprised. It is a difficult needle to thread.
Yeah, it just shows you that, I don't know, it just, what would have happened if he said, yeah, he lost?
I don't know. Walls made the point, like, your predecessor said he lost, and that's why he's not on the ticket.
Yes, right. So they would have been.
I mean, too late to change the ticket now. But, yeah, I think that was Vance's weakest moment. I think Walls' strongest moment were some of his answers on abortion. Yeah.
And that is becoming a big issue in these campaigns. I think you're seeing, just looking at the ads, more. I was surprised how long it has taken for the abortion issue to become front and center on the ads. And it is now. I mean, it clearly is, both in the U.S. Senate race here in Ohio between Sherrod Brown and Bernie Moreno. Brown, at the beginning, was all about fentanyl, border, and Bernie Moreno's record as a car
dealer. Yeah, because people don't know Bernie, and he's trying to set the narrative.
And now, I'd say most of them, by him and his supporting PACs, are focused on abortion.
Well, it's the one issue that Harris is winning by a long shot in terms of who do you trust with your reproductive rights. I don't know. I mean, I think what was interesting was Vance's response, which you play that Republicans generally have to win over the public and that it's like a hearts and minds campaign. And sure, but I did find it interesting, and I should say, I know they didn't do fact checking then, but he's like, Vance shying away from the national ban, he has said he would support a 15-week ban, like 100%. Now, Trump did tweet out that he would veto a ban, which I thought was fascinating.
While Vance was responding, it was like simultaneous. It was like, yeah.
And so I don't know which way they go on that. I do find that really interesting. I think that's part of the reason that Mike Pence, well, one of the reasons he's not a fan of Trump's anymore, is because Mike Pence is a dyed-in-the-wool, like, social conservative. And for him, that is unfathomable.
They really are. The cliche is that they are the dog that has caught the car. They, for decades, were trying to overturn Roe, the hardline anti-abortion rights Republicans. They succeeded with Donald Trump's first presidency, not looking at the polls that show a clear majority of Americans, 55 to 60% of Americans support the Roe standard. And now they're trying to figure out, okay, we've done this. How do we fix it?
Yeah,
because where's the middle ground, if there is any?
Yeah, and I think that's why they were shooting at this 15 weeks. And I think that's when 94-95% of abortions take place. So it is strange that the party of the right to life, the no abortion movement, is now suddenly 94% of them are okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll have to see that.
But that's the problem. If they go too far towards saying that they're far right, will get mad and perhaps won't turn out. And
it's a delicate needle to thread. Particularly, I find it interesting for Trump to sort of say, I would veto a ban on abortion past 15 weeks. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, because they would. Yeah. It is the issue, and it's a confounding issue for Republicans, and we'll see how. I think the economy is still number one.
Oh, yeah, probably.
I think abortion is probably tied for second with probably immigration and the personality of Donald Trump. Looking at polls, you know, most polls, let's focus on Ohio. Most polls have Trump up by 8 to 10 points over the past couple of months. And that was his margin in 2016 and 2020. But a couple of polls have caught my eye. A New York Times, Siena poll last week had that margin shrinking to 6. And an ActiveVote poll done in, an ActiveVote is a less reputable polling institute firm, but they did a poll in August that had Trump over Harris by 12 points in Ohio. Now that same poll has Trump up by 7. So if you believe that poll, his lead has shrunk by 5 points. Do you think there's any, I don't think there's much of a chance that Trump loses Ohio, but there's some movement there. Annie, what do you make of that?
So I will say the New York Times Siena poll, it gets an A rating from 538. They're a very reputable poll. So I do put more weight, say, in that than the other. But I think it is possible that he wins by less. It could be possible. It could be true. The race could be narrowing in Ohio. Now, I think that would tell me two things. Let's say Trump wins by 4 in Ohio, half of what he did last time. I think that also means that Harris is carrying the blue wall. I mean, I think, given our proximity and the similarity of our voters, I think that means she's winning Michigan. She's winning Pennsylvania, probably Wisconsin. So a 4 points here might portend good in the entire, you know, Midwest. But I also think that could mean that Sherrod Brown squeaks it out. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Trump wins by 8. That means what? 8.5-9% of Trump voters need to go for Brown, that's a heavy lift. Every percentage point he can tick down is less of a lift for Sherrod Brown.
Yeah. I think it is going to be more competitive than 2016 and 2020 simply because of, you know, there's a fatigue factor. This is Trump's third run.
Mm-hmm.
I think voters say, you know what, we just want somebody else. They may stay home. They may not vote for Harris, but they may stay home.
That was the Trump-Biden problem.
Yeah.
It may also be they suspect Trump is going to win.
Could be.
Now, also, let's say you're willing to go against the Republicans on redistricting, right? You're going to vote for issue one. Does that make you more likely to ticket split? I don't know.
I think there will be a lot of ticket splitting this time.
I'm going to be so curious about that.
You're seeing it in other states as well. There's the Senate candidates, Democratic Senate candidates in the red states are doing much better than the than the Harris ticket.
Yeah. In Arizona, Ruben Gallegos, the Democrat, is running ahead of Carrie Lake. And then I think Trump is up in Arizona over Harris.
It's going to be an interesting night. And, you know, voting begins next week. So it's no longer election day. It's election month here in Ohio and many other states.
And you only have a couple of days left to register to vote or to update your registration.
That's right. If you've moved, you got to move your registration to your new spot. Digging deeper, one last point on this thing. The leaners in the New York Times poll favored Harris by a 2-1 margin. And what I'm going to be watching now to see if the Harris campaign starts running more ads here in Ohio. Because if they start running more ads here in Ohio, say during the local news broadcast, not the sports broadcast, because it's always kind of hard to tell if that's a national ad or a locally placed ad. But we start seeing Harris ads pop up on Jeopardy or in the local newscast, you'll know that they think they at least have a chance to be competitive here.
I wonder if we're going to see them run more ads in the Cleveland market.
Mm-hmm.
Like that base that Brown is going to need, where Cuyahoga County has had some pretty low turnout in recent elections, and that's been very bad news for Democrats.
And that is where Kamala Harris energizing the African-American vote.
That's what I wonder.
Could really help.
Yeah, if you see her on television in Cuyahoga County in Northeast Ohio, I think that'll be pretty interesting.
Another, we can do our election day preview later, but another county to watch is Clark County in where Springfield is. Trump won that by, what, 25 or so?
Yeah, that's a very red county.
Oh, but I want to see if that margin shrinks.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
After all this controversy.
I'm really curious about my home county of Delaware.
Yes.
It's purpling, but will it go for Harris? I don't know.
I don't think
it has yet gone for a Democrat, but it's gotten close.
We shall see. Anna Staver, host of All Sides with Anna Staver. You can catch it on a podcast wherever you get your podcasts. You can also hear it on the radio in the Columbus market on 89.7 NPR News. Anna, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
We'll be right back.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's tight.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
All right, time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past 7 days. And this week, we have to give it to J.D. Vance on style and on message. I'll say he won the debate. His goal was to introduce himself to the American public and show them that he is not the weird guy that Democrats portray. For at least one night, he succeeded. I would say this week's vice presidential debate was the first performance of J.D. Vance's 2028 run for president, regardless of what happens this November. That'll do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster, which is part of the NPR network. As always, please to be sure to leave us a good review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Just tell your friends about us. For our student producer, Katie Genius, our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, and our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.